Engine running. Liftoff. We have a liftoff.
Good evening. Welcome. Eric Erickson here, News 95.5 AM 750 WSB. The phone number 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. We got the Gorsuch hearing. We've got the situation in London and the Devin Nunes press conference. We got to play some of this audio here. So the chairman, the House committee looking into the Russians and the investigation and the wiretapping, he says he has sources, and he won't say who those sources are, but sources in the intelligence community who have told him that, in fact, Donald Trump was spied on by the Obama administration. However, there are the usual caveats, including this one. If I can actually get the sound working right today. Let's see.
Did President Obama order any kind of surveillance of the president,
President-elect? We don't know. We don't know who sent the taskings. If the taskings were changed into what went into these intelligence reports, but we're going to try to find that out.
So he wouldn't say yes, but it does appear something happened.
Today I briefed the president on the concerns that I had about incidental collection and how it relates to President-elect Trump and his transition team and the concerns that I have. As I said earlier, there'll be more information. Hopefully by Friday, the NSA is cooperating very, very well. And lastly, I'll say that the reports that I was able to see did not have anything to do with Russia or the Russia investigation or any tie to the Trump team.
Notice he said the NSA. What about the FBI?
I knew that there was some incidental collection because Lieutenant General Michael Flynn was caught up talking with Sergei Kislyak.
Right.
Does this go beyond that, and does this qualify as the sort of wiretapping that the president was tweeting?
Well, it definitely goes beyond what happened to General Flynn. Now, of course, we don't actually know yet officially what happened to General Flynn. We just know that his name leaked out, but we don't know how it was picked up yet. That's one of the things that we asked for in our March 15th letter, was for the NSA, CIA, and FBI to get us all the unmasking that was done. And I'll tell you, NSA is being cooperative, but you know, so far the FBI has not told us whether or not they're going to respond to our March 15th letter, which is now a couple weeks old.
The FBI has not said, so I wonder why he didn't ask them in the hearing the other day. One more clip from him before I get into the heart of this.
Can you rule out the possibility that senior Obama administration officials were involved in this?
No, we cannot.
Mr. Sherman, you talked about internet.
Given that you have said there was a FISA warrant which would have been approved by a judge, are you concerned that essentially you're saying members of the Trump team were in contact with people who were the target of a counterintelligence or some form of investigation?
No, I think you'd be, this would be, I think you're reading too much into that. This is normal intelligence reporting. This is just normal intelligence reporting. The question is, you know, should he himself or others, should they have been put into these reports? And I don't know the answer to that yet, but we're going to try to get to the bottom of it.
So here's what I think is happening. This is, and again, this is speculation on my part, but I know enough about how these situations work. When individuals, American individuals, come into contact with foreign officials in Russia and China, oligarchs from foreign countries, they're probed. See, he uses the phrase masking, and what that is the intelligence agencies, they keep the American names out of it because of due process concerns. There's a procedure to actually unmask and reveal who these people are and to look into it. So you've got the Trump transition team. They're coming into power. They're beginning to reach out to foreign leaders and foreign governments and foreign businesses to talk about the transition, to reassure our allies, to reassure our trading partners. I mean, the odds that these people in the transition team did get swept up into routine intelligence sweeps, it makes perfect sense. And it makes perfect sense that they were probed and unmasked to see who these people are releasing American intelligence. Oh, it was someone on the Trump transition team. Never mind. Let's move on. That seems to make a lot of sense to me. I mean, in the same way that the people on the Trump team who were involved with the Russians in third-party businesses, well, of course they got swept up in routine intelligence of foreign agents because they were talking to the Russian officials and oligarchs about their side business dealings unrelated to Trump. So, of course, they would have been screened by intelligence. And then it was ancillary business, wasn't about the election. Never mind then. But they still have to check. The intelligence community has an obligation to check these things. The intelligence community has an obligation to go out there and see what's going on. Now, interestingly enough, Adam Schiff, who is in, who is on the committee with Nunes, he's the ranking Democrat. He's released a statement this afternoon saying he's got grave concerns over the way the House Intelligence Committee Chairman Devin Nunes, somebody's got my phone going, handling of the Trump Tower wiretapping investigation. Adam Schiff is criticizing Nunes for the announcement earlier in the day that he had seen intercepted intelligence showing authorities had incidentally gathered information on members of the Trump transition team. Now, again, that's the key here is the incidental nature of this, because if they were reaching out to other individuals, if they were reaching out to foreign governments, foreign oligarchs, for you name it, they're going to get swept up into this. Their names are going to come up. Their voices are going to come up. And the intelligence community, because they're talking about government affairs, are going to want to see who it is. And then they've realized they unmasked the person, realize it's someone from the Trump transition team. And they say, oh, okay, we see what they're doing now. It wasn't someone leaking foreign intelligence. I mean, this all comports. It is legal that they did it. It is illegal how they handle it. And it is notable that they're using the words incidental because it just came up in routine process. And there's nothing further there. There is no there. The Democrats are hanging their hat on this. It's like the John Ossoff race. They're emotionally invested in this. And when it doesn't pan out for them, you and I both know we're going to get some crazy conspiracy theories from the left. It is 5:26. I guess, so there's a story today about John Ossoff, however you say his name. You know, the 30-something who's running for Congress as a Democrat in the 6th Congressional District has ties to Al-Qaeda's favorite TV network, Al Jazeera. And I suppose if we were to talk about this story today, people would be screaming at us that we're trying to somehow tie him, impugn him to the terror attack in London, which we're not by pointing out he's got ties to Al-Qaeda's favorite network, Al Jazeera. But we should avoid the story today, lest anyone try to make that claim. You should know, though, that he's got over $1 million. I mean, I'm impressed. He comes across as the sort of silver spoon kid, went to Georgetown and played with the bros and whatnot and doing his Han Solo nonsense on video. He's got a higher net worth than most of the Republicans running. Silver spoon rich kid who thinks he's entitled to a congressional seat. That appears to be what's going on in that case. There's a lot more about John Ossoff, and I want to tie this in to the Democrats' handling of the Russian situation, because it looks to me like they're building up their angst, they're building up their hopes, and it's all going to come crashing down on them. Democratic strategists and party operatives are beginning to worry about that. They're beginning to worry that the Democrats are in for a rude awakening and major depression. And Ossoff has a lot to do with it, as does the Russian investigation. They're all kind of tied together. When we come back, I want to explore that and get into your phone calls at 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK, and we'll get into the latest from the Neil Gorsuch hearing as well. Oh, I've got a red alert for you guys. It is Eric Erickson here on News 95.5 AM 750 WSB. It is time to take action on the spur of the moment. If you are in Georgia, I just received a text from underneath the Gold Dome right now. They are going to try to rush back through the casino bill tomorrow, HB 158, in the House Regulated Industries Committee. They've thrown it as a surprise now that everyone's gone home. They're hoping to be able to rush it through, thinking no one's paying attention. We always pay attention here at the Eric Erickson Show in Atlanta's Evening News as you pay attention. And I know many of you are opposed to it. And last time we had to do this, you guys generated several thousand messages in less than 24 hours. And I'm going to make it available for you to do again. And that is to text the word casino to 52886. Text the word casino to 52886 and you will be sent a link so that you can reach out to the members of the Regulated Industries Committee in the House and tell them you don't want them to consider HB 158. And if they do, they should vote no. We've got that set up and ready for you to go. Now, I want to talk about the good Lord. Wow. There are a lot of you listening right now. Thank you. Okay, I want to talk about Democratic hopes for those of you around the world now watching via Twitter live stream and whatnot. The Democrats are building themselves up. Building themselves up with false expectations about John Ossoff or Ossoff, however you say his name, in the 6th District, in the same way they're building themselves up about the Russian investigation of Donald Trump. They are convinced that they're going to find that Donald Trump and Vladimir Putin had secret meetings and collaborations to get Donald Trump elected, in the same way they're convinced that Ossoff is going to win this race. They have poured millions of dollars into the 6th Congressional District in Georgia, which is a solidly Republican district. The Republican nominee in that district, Tom Price, never won with less than 60% of the vote. And yet they are convinced, because there are so many Republicans in the race, that Ossoff can get 50% and somehow win without a runoff. That, I mean, he's even admitted that if he doesn't get to 50 plus one, he's probably dead in the water. And Republicans are starting to panic, you should know. Republicans really are scared because of the number of people in the race. But the odds are they still win. We're going to have Judson Hill at the top of the hour, who's running in that race. We had Amy Kramer yesterday. We've had Karen Handel. We've had Bob Gray, several of the other candidates. And we'll talk to him about this race as well. And he's apparently, the polling shows he and Bob Gray have some momentum. Karen Handel is in the lead. John Ossoff is in second place. And it looks like he's going to get into a runoff. But the Republicans are scared because of the momentum. At the same time, though, Democrats in Washington are starting to tell people the odds are he's not going to win. Democrats in Washington are trying to tell their big supporters and big donors and big door knockers and grassroots activists they need to calm down on this, because the odds are he's not going to win, and they're building their expectations so high that it's going to be just a crashing disappointment. And I think they're right, by the way. I think that these Democrats are right, that the psychological impact of losing a race when so many Democrats are convinced they're going to win it, despite all of the evidence, I think that's going to hurt Democratic morale. And it's not just there. There, Washington State and several other places have some special elections going on, and the Democrats are trying to make inroads into areas that Donald Trump won, and they're not having success. But they've convinced themselves it's going to happen, just like they've convinced themselves about the Russian thing. And no amount of evidence can convince them otherwise. Good Lord, you people have just sent out more than 3,000 messages in the last couple of minutes. Holy, well, I can't say that word on the radio. Okay. Again, by the way, if you want to text the word casino to 52886, you'll be able to reach out immediately to the Regulated Industries Committee in the House and tell them to vote no on HB 158, the casino legislation. On these Democrats and their expectations built up so high, there is a psychological value to winning in special elections. I remember when I was at CNN, and one of the first special elections after Barack Obama won, the Democrats actually won that special election, and they were jubilant that clearly things were going to go well for them. And those of us who are Republicans said, you know, you really shouldn't build up your expectations, because special elections are not indicative of regular elections. But no, they couldn't be persuaded. This meant that everything was hunky-dory for Barack Obama. Well, then several other special elections came about, and the Democrats lost, and then there was no, special elections, you know, they don't mean anything. Pay no attention to the special election. Turns out, the Tea Party swept in 2010. Well, now you've got the Democrats again with the psychological imperative that they've got to win the 6th Congressional District. They've poured millions of dollars into this race. They've built up Ossoff's name ID. They've given him profiles in the New York Times. They've given him sweetheart talking points on MSNBC. They've trotted him around the nation online as someone they can support, as a sure bet to win the seat. People have poured their money into it, and the odds are he's not. And now the Republicans are trotting out stories like his ties to Al-Qaeda's favorite TV network, Al Jazeera. Yeah, he's gotten money from Al Jazeera. He's done work with Al Jazeera, the anti-American news outlet. I'm sure we'll get accused of trying to lump him in with the terror attack or some such nonsense today if we bring that up today. But you do need to know the stories out there that he, and it is Al-Qaeda's favorite network. I mean, Osama bin Laden said it was his favorite network. And Ossoff did work with them and got paid by them. That should be deeply relevant, among other things. And the guy's got over $1 million. How does a trust fund? I mean, he's got to be a silver spoon left-wing Democrat whose mommy and daddy. That's why he was able to go work for Hank Johnson and then suddenly have a film. And clearly he's being subsidized by mom and dad, it would appear. And this is the guy the Democrats think is going to somehow win that seat. And what's going to happen to them psychologically when he doesn't? What's going to happen psychologically to the Democrats when there is no evidence that Donald Trump colluded with the Russians, as it's looking more and more likely? I mean, that's why Adam Schiff is having his meltdown today. I think Britt Hume is right. He just put out a tweet a few minutes ago that he's not really upset with what Nunes did. He's upset with the substance of the findings, that there is no tangible evidence. Everything was incidental. And the Democrats are just invested in the fact that something's got to give. The Democrats are invested in the fact that there's corruption when there doesn't appear to be. It's going to end badly for them. But we'll be able to watch it all fall down around them. It is 5:55. A friend of mine just sent me a note and asked if I could explain why this HB 158, the casino legislation, is so bad. There are a number of reasons, for those of you who don't know. One of the main ones is that they included a provision in it that if they build a casino in downtown Atlanta, it has to include an entertainment venue. Now, the government, one, shouldn't be telling a business to do that. But number two, think about this. Casinos in Biloxi and New Orleans and St. Louis and the Illinois area and Wisconsin, they wiped out local entertainment venues because they were paying inflated prices to lure in entertainment until the other places went out of business. And there's already a business coalition in Atlanta that has already projected that you will hurt the Fox Theater, you will hurt the Tabernacle, you'll hurt the Verizon Amphitheater, you will hurt Chastain, you will hurt Lakewood, and there are several other venues that are going to be financially impacted negatively by the state's insistence that this place have an entertainment venue. Beyond that, though, we also know that we're going to see a loss of revenue to the Hope Scholarship if this comes in, because they can't even make the money now in the lottery they need to fund Hope, and this is going to take further money away from it. Repeated studies show that it's the gamblers buying lottery tickets that suddenly go buy gambling instead and devastate the scholarship. Judson Hill when we come back. It is 6:09. I am Eric Erickson. This is WSB. The phone number, 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. Radar is all clear, unlike yesterday. The 6th Congressional District, I've mentioned it plenty of times. We've had plenty of the candidates on, and it's the primary, it's, or not even the primary, the initial race happens in April. It's coming up soon, and then there will be a runoff that stretches out several more months between the top two vote getters. This is a jungle primary, so to speak, where the Democrats and Republicans are all on the ballot together. It's not divided by partisan, so you're hoping that two Republicans get in as opposed to a Republican and John Ossoff, or if John Ossoff does it, the Republicans rally to beat him. One of the people who's running, another friend of mine in the race, State Senator Judson Hill, and he's joining me now. Welcome.
Thanks, Eric. I enjoyed the opportunity to be on here today and visit with you. Thank you.
Well, glad to have you with me. Now, I just providing you the opportunity everyone else does, I want you to be able to make your case to the listeners of the 6th as to why they should consider voting for you in this race.
Great question. It's really the most important question to ask in this race. And what I bring to the voters is an individual, a citizen legislator, who has a proven conservative record of addressing the serious problems and advancing serious common sense solutions to the problems that we face. I'm a conservative reformer, a proven fighter. I've stood up to the special interests when it was important to do so. I've stood up to the political establishment to defend our conservative principles and our values, the values of our constituents. I've actually had the scars to show it. I've been punished for that stand. I've had a committee chairmanship, for example, taken away, but I got elected by the constituents of the Georgia Senate District based on the conservative principles that they believe in and I believe in, and I wasn't going to give up those principles for anything else but defending them. So if you remember one thing, it's you've got to prove it. I have a proven conservative record. I'm a fighter. And I've always stood up for the people I represent. There's nobody in the race. That's the differentiator. There's nobody in the race that has that record.
Well, you mentioned standing up to your own side, and I am mindful of several of the fights you fought in the legislature over the years. And I know there's a concern in the 6th Congressional District with supporting the president, but also holding him accountable. There's still, even among Republicans, some skepticism. How do you balance supporting the president and his agenda, but also holding your own side accountable?
For me, it's really simple. It sounds like it's trite, but for me, it's not. Whenever the interests of the people of the 6th Congressional District differ with anybody else, I'm always going to take the stand with them. I've got a proven record of taking that stand, standing up to whoever it is, if it's inconsistent with what the people that I represent want. And I think in this race, in any race, before a candidate can tell you what they really want to do, I think it's important that they show you what they've already done, they have done, because the best predictor of what someone's going to do in life is to look at their past. So that's how I make the decision, is I stand for the people of the 6th District. I believe that those interests align with the president's interest in a great number of ways, whether it's tax policy, whether it's a repeal and replace Obamacare, whether it's standing for a military and enforcing the immigration laws of this land, among others. I believe that those principles that the president stands for, and when they're consistent with the interests of the 6th District, including promoting job creation, I think it's easy to line up with him.
If you're just tuning in, I'm talking to Judson Hill. He's running for the 6th Congressional District, Tom Price's old seat. What do you make of the Democrats rallying to a 30-something like Ossoff, or however you say his name?
They are very ignited at the grassroots level. He's raising money between Hollywood and New York City across this nation. I believe it's the first race that will be tested on since the November election, where I believe Americans voted to chart a new course, which is critically important that we chart that new course and get our nation back on the right track. We have a limited period of time. They know we have a limited period of time, and they know this is a district that they could pick up if the wrong person is selected to go to a final round in a battle against them. They'll probably have $10 to $15 million in a runoff.
against most likely the Republican.
Yeah, I am amazed by the guy's fundraising. I really am, though, given the partisan mix in the district, I don't know how much good it'll do him. At least they're depriving it of other people. Now, one of his big issues that he's campaigning on, of course, is saying no to the president's agenda and whatnot. And I'm trying to ask each of the candidates, when time allows, what is your big issue that kind of is energizing you to get to Washington?
Well, there's a number of issues, but what energizes me to get to Washington is we have a limited period of time. These are serious issues. We have a short period of time to seize this opportunity, maybe probably once in our lifetime, really, our adult lifetime, Eric, that you and I had this opportunity. And so that's what's inspiring me to get to work with bringing our proven principles that we've advanced in Georgia to do so. I'd say in the top three would be healthcare reform to make healthcare more affordable and accessible to all Americans. Georgia's led the charge. I've been a part of leading that charge for years in our state with common sense solutions such as buying insurance across state lines and in dealing with pre-existing conditions so it's affordable and accessible to Americans. I led the charge in cutting the income taxes and the corporate taxes and the taxes on small businesses. I wrote the legislation in Georgia last year. We've advanced that. The House has passed it, and I hope our governor is going to be able to sign that this year. We need to take those principles to Washington, where we've really created a great economic environment here in Georgia to promote job growth and creation, where we've created over 500,000 new jobs and been named the best state in the nation to do so. And another touch point is standing up for our military. I mean, look at London today. I mean, if you weren't concerned, we need to be reminded once again the security and safety of our world is at stake. It's a dangerous world, and we need to strengthen our immigration laws. We need to enforce them. We need to secure our borders. We need to strengthen our military funding. I applaud the president there. We need to balance those spending increases with spending cuts. We've done that in Georgia. I've helped lead the charge there, and cutting regulations and burdensome, overburdened programs and agencies that no longer need to exist. We need to repeal some of those similar. We need to advance those measures in Washington. And I believe the best person to do so is someone who has a proven record who's done it before.
That leads me then to my last question here. We've got about a minute left, and you've made your case of why people should vote for you, but I'm curious in what your take is on what distinguishes you from the other people in the race. There are so many of them. What sets you apart?
One thing. I have a proven conservative record for standing up for my constituents. There's nobody else. That's the differentiator. There's no one has a proven conservative record of standing up. They have different talk is cheap, but the best predictor of what someone's going to do is what they've done in the past. And there's nobody else that's been in the trenches that have done it, has been successful on tax policy, healthcare policy, making it more affordable, standing up for our military, passing the strongest immigration laws in our nation. And helping promote job creation. We don't have time to test the waters. President Trump didn't pick an inexperienced person in Congressman Tom Price or Governor Sonny Perdue, and I don't think the people of this district can afford to do that as well. And that's why people like Speaker Newt Gingrich and Senator Marco Rubio endorsed me, because they know how serious these times are. We need a proven conservative to get to work on day one on behalf of the people of the 6th District. That's what distinguishes me from everybody else in this race.
Well, Jensen, listen, we are out of time, but I wanted to thank you for stopping by, and good luck to you on this campaign.
Thank you, Eric. I appreciate what you do, and thanks for the opportunity to share today.
Absolutely. Jensen Hill running in the 6th Congressional District. We're continuing our interviews with the Republican candidates in that race. Meanwhile, there is some breaking news out of Washington you should know about before we go to break. Related to Georgia, Congressman Jody Heiss has said this evening that he absolutely will not vote for the tickling of Obamacare plan that the Republicans have put forward, saying it does not repeal, it does not replace, it does not improve, and it does not lower the costs of Obamacare. And he is 1,000,000,000% right. It It is 6:26. Let me bring you guys up to speed with what I'm being told is happening in the legislature regarding the casinos. And if you want to text the word casino to 52886, you'll be able to get in contact with the Regulated Industries Committee in the House and tell them to oppose the legislation. That's casino, C-A-S-I-N-O, to 52886. So what's happening, I'm being told, is that in the Senate, they're considering the legislation on fantasy sports. Now, you do need to know, and many of my friends disagree with me on this, I don't consider fantasy sports to be gambling. I realize many friends involve money, but I think fantasy sports largely are skill. The friends I know who play it pay attention to stats. They pay attention to the trades. I mean, it keeps them engaged and paying attention. Many of my friends are opposed to it as well and consider it gambling. The legislature is considering legislation to clarify that as fantasy sports aren't considered gambling, or participation in fantasy sports where money's involved isn't considering gambling. So I'm being told that members in the House are trying to rush HB 158, the House casino legislation, back into the House Regulated Industries Committee as it is considering fantasy sports, and the Senate is considering it concurrently. They want to then be able to pass substitute legislation where essentially they stick the House casino bill into the fantasy sports bill and try to get it through, thinking the fantasy sports is going to survive and get passed. You know, Tom Glavine has come out in favor of that legislation and has been under the Gold Dome supporting it. So they're trying to do an end run around the voters. Everybody's gone home. Nobody's paying attention to the casinos. There's one last ditch effort to try to get it through the House Regulated Industries Committee. They're doing it at the spur of the moment, at the very last moment, while no one's paying attention. We're paying attention, and you're paying attention, and you should let the Regulated Industries Committee know you're paying attention by texting the word casino to 52886. When we come back, we'll move on into the Gorsuch hearing and take your phone calls at WSB. It is 6:39. I am Eric Erickson. This is WSB, and the phone number is 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. So the Gorsuch hearing is continuing on Capitol Hill, and he's continuing to gain praise from the media for doing so well. I mean, this is MSNBC, for example.
Talk to me about the standout moments and what we've heard so far today.
Well, Dianne Feinstein certainly went after him on a number of issues that are critical to progressives, and abortion, euthanasia at the top of the list. Look to his work on euthanasia. In fact, he's written a whole book about it. I will refer to the part of the book that concerns a lot of people who believe in the woman's right to choose. Human life is fundamentally and inherently valuable, and the taking of human life by private persons is always wrong.
Always wrong. Yep. The Democrats are upset. This is John Yarmuth. He's a Democratic congressman from Kentucky. He's on the House side, not the Senate side, but he's deeply influential among more moderate Democrats. Even the Senate moderate Democrats listen to him.
And Gorsuch is not just very, very smart, but smooth and affable. To be totally obstructionist on somebody who makes as good an impression as he does, I don't think bodes well for us if we don't have legitimate concerns about his judicial temperament or his philosophy.
Yeah, and you know, I played the Gloria Borger clip yesterday. Let me play that again for you, because it's making the rounds again today. And I mean, she's really encapsulating the problem for Democrats.
This was a seat that Republicans said they were not even...
Wrong clip. From where did the Gloria Borger clip go? I will track down the Gloria Borger clip. It was there in the soundboard, and it looks like it has disappeared. It's a problem for the Democrats, largely because they don't have an argument to make. And what's happening is Republicans are already mounting the case to get rid of the filibuster because they know that there's going to be another vacancy coming up. And if they get rid of the filibuster now, they've scrapped any Democratic objections for the next case. Here's the Borger clip. Well, maybe. We're having all sorts of audio. Yep, let's see.
The nominee. Judge Gorsuch is completely qualified, and everybody knows it. He's totally, completely qualified. He's exactly the kind of a nominee you would expect from a Republican, period. There is, you know, this is what elections are about.
You've got John King, you've got Wolf Blitzer, you've got other nonpartisan analysts on network saying that they haven't laid a glove on the guy. They haven't made an impact. Meanwhile, he's coming across as very personable. Kudos to Ben Sasse. Gorsuch looks like and sounds like he could be Ben Sasse's older brother. Yesterday, I played you the clip of Ben Sasse reading the text from his wife of how can this guy sit there that long and not have to pee. And there was another funny Ben Sasse moment today. It was actually funny enough that Ted Cruz put it on his Twitter page.
You're 40 years from now, when you retire and hang up your robe.
Wrong one. This is it.
Role does the Declaration of Independence play in interpreting the Constitution?
The Declaration of Independence is an amazing document, right? These are men who, as Benjamin Franklin said, we either hang together or we hang separately. When they put their name to that document, it was a death warrant if they failed. That's why John Hancock is now synonymous with a signature. No one remembers who John Hancock was, but they know that that's a signature because he wrote his name so bigly, big and boldly.
You just said bigly.
Bigly.
And I just won $5.
That's fantastic. The Democrats have failed so bad at laying a glove on Gorsuch. They've left not even a scratch on him that you're finally at the point of peak hysteria from Chuck Schumer, who knows what's coming. He's got to play to the Democratic base. Even he knows Gorsuch is qualified, which is why he's going out of his way to say stuff like this.
Judge Gorsuch looks like he's playing dodgeball with the Senate Judiciary Committee. He has bent backwards to avoid revealing anything at all about his judicial philosophy or the legal issues that concern the American people. There is no legally justifiable rationale for not answering the questions he was asked. He's hiding behind this. He simply wants to hide his views from the American people.
I mean, that's what both sides say about the other. Schumer is also out there now saying that we need to wait until we get to the bottom of the Russian investigation to see if there was some sort of corruption there because Gorsuch may in some way be involved. And you got Sheldon Whitehouse out there, the senator from Rhode Island, having a meltdown over dark money that Gorsuch always sides with corporate interests.
The Tenth Circuit, I don't believe you hardly ever have party line decisions made by your court. We looked and I count only two in the entire time you've been on the court.
I really appreciate you pointing that out. Different. Thank you.
Gorsuch ran a circle around him. He's trying to claim that Gorsuch is some sort of partisan hack who is invested in corporate interests, and then he points out that there haven't been any real party line votes on the Tenth Circuit since Gorsuch has been there. There have only been two, and so Gorsuch is, I really thank you for pointing that out. Meanwhile, Chrissy Matthews from MSNBC taking the party line pulse and turning it into a soundbite.
A president nominates a Supreme Court justice. The Senate deliberates on the nomination. We will not get back to such respect if we let Trump exploit the vacancy Mitch McConnell created. We cannot allow these two opportunists to complete what we call in basketball the alley-oop play. One guy throws the ball high up there above the basket, and the guy stands right underneath, jams it in. I don't want to see Donald Trump stuff his nominee through the hoop. Why? Because it's not his turn. It's Merrick Garland's turn, and everyone knows it. Vote nay on Gorsuch. Demand the 60 votes and don't give them to Trump. It's not this guy's turn. It's not his guy's turn. And all the charm and dancing and Mr. Nice Guy is not going to change it.
You know, it would be nice, maybe. Maybe what Trump should have done is renominate Merrick Garland and let the Senate Republicans kill his nomination with a vote. And what would the Democrats do then? They would complain. They gave him the process. They just didn't like it. They are so butthurt over it. They cannot let it go. It's kind of funny to watch. Y'all, before I get out of here, let me just say this. The Democrats are not going to sabotage the Gorsuch nomination. Between that and Ossoff losing in Georgia 6, these people are going to go insane. It is going to be glorious to behold. Just watch the Democratic meltdown that's coming. Stick around, and don't forget, text CASINO to 52886.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.